Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 176 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, part one. It's a two-parter from the Dublin Podcast Festival that we went and did a little while ago. Essentially, it's a two-parter, but it's also kind of a five-parter because there's a continuation over on the Hardcore Listing podcast, which is already out. But anyway, for now, I'll tell you that part one, yeah, it was, the crowd was amazing. It was the Tivoli Theatre, amazing turnout. It blows my mind that people had come to these things. And I always have a surprise guest or two. And on this one, I had a blind boy from the Rubber Bandits, who's a legend. If you're not familiar with the Rubber Bandits, their music is wonderful and hilarious. Blind Boy has a book out now that's, I think it's The World According to Blind Boy or something along them lines. I should know, but check the book out. It's available on Amazon. It's available in bookstores, all that kind of thing. I recommend it highly. He started to tell a few of the stories on his new podcast. His podcast is called The Blind Boy Podcast. I recommend that too. But I can't wait for the book. I've ordered it and I'm waiting patiently by my mailbox or letterbox, as I live in England, not America. So that's the first guest. And then I have Chris and Stu come out. I won't ramble too much. As ever, we're brought to you by Speech Development. iRecords.com. If you're a regular listener and a fan, it'd be cool if you go and have a look and see if there's anything that you want to buy. Kind of, you get this free entertainment every week. It'd be cool. And you can go and rate and review. I never ask. I asked for ages and then I asked people not to rate and review. But now they've done the update on iTunes, it's easier for me to see your ratings and reviews. And I've got an average 5 out of 5 a rating. So I'm hoping that you guys will keep that. And go and give hilarious reviews and comments and take the piss out of me. But yeah, anyway, that's all nonsense. Speechdevelopmentirecords.com is where you can buy my book, my DVD, all sorts of other stuff. Christmas is coming. It'll be a cool time to spend a bit of money on stuff like that. And I'm going to give you a lot of podcasts between now and the end of the year. So anything you fancy chipping in is wicked, but no pressure to if you can't afford to, obviously. Let's get into this episode, eh? It's a two-parter, so I'll tell you more on the outro, because there's other ones as well. So, or we talk about it in this one. Let's go. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together, please, for the one, the only, the man, the myth, the compulsive podcaster, Scroobius Pip.
You all right? How is everyone? In my head, a Thunderstruck by AC/DC was going to be about 10 times louder than that. And it was going to be like that Microsoft launch video where it has all the nerds kind of just all dancing to start me up and stuff. And I was going to come out and dance and stuff, but I couldn't really hear it, so I bottled that. How are you all? This is lovely. Thank you all for coming along. How many of you have been in this theatre before? Not many, like five of you. And how many of you have been in here as a grown-up? Because apparently this used to be somewhere everyone came as kids to watch weird stuff. Well, I'm glad you all found it. It's a bit out of the way, isn't it? Has anyone got any idea what's happening tonight? I know you haven't, because we figured it out about 10 minutes ago backstage. There's going to be two halves, and the live shows in general involve you guys. And what we do, rather than passing a mic around the crowd or anything, we get you to form a queue and you come on stage and you sit down and ask a question or have a chat. And that's kind of the bulk of the podcast. But that's going to be in part two. In part one, I'm going to have a couple of guests and then we'll have a little interval. And then, yeah, we'll all chat. Does that sound okay? Lovely. Well, before we get going, at the live ones, I always try and think of some stuff to talk to you about first. And Ireland, genuinely, I've said this online, and some of you might not have believed me, but we weren't going to be doing any live podcasts this year, but
on my touring days, we'd end every tour in Ireland because it was always our rowdiest crowds and one of our favourite places. And we came early on and played in Galway and Limerick and all over the place. And, yeah, it always meant the world. And when we played in Galway, I went in an HMV there. And because over here albums came out at the weekend, I think it was, instead of Monday in the UK, it's the first time I walked in a record store and saw one of my records on sale. And it just meant the world. It was like genuinely the first time I got to walk in and go, oh shit, I've got a record out. And then one of our songs came on in the store and I felt really awkward and just kind of went, I'm going to go over here now. And so yeah, that's kind of meant that Ireland has always meant a lot to us. Another reason it's always meant a lot to me is because Ireland is the only place that someone has tried to sell a sex story about me to the newspapers. It's so funny. I still don't know if it's true. I mean, I know the sex was true. I was there. But a friend told me that a friend of his was working at the Irish Sun, I think it was. And he was like, look, my mate has let me know that someone tried to sell a sex story about you. But he's squashed it. He's covered it up. And I was like to my mate, like, well, thanks. Or I don't know what the story would have been. Because the thing for me was, I've never been famous enough for a sex story to be like newsworthy. Like, unless I was doing some really fucked up shit. Unless like she came back to my hotel room and it like seemed empty. And then she saw a chair in the corner and was like, hang. And in the back of the chair, she saw some eyes. And then an erection coming out of the chair. And it was like, mildly famous rapper Scroobius Pip is into kinky sex, dressed up as a chair, being sat upon until he achieves orgasm. Achieves. Like it's a game. Enough. Like when you unlock things on Xbox, it says you've got an achievement. Like, you have achieved orgasm. Continue or exit. So yeah, that amused me that it would have had to be really dirty. But equally, I mean, I don't think I'm famous enough even if it was cheating, but I was single. So the news story someone tried to sell was touring musician sleeps with someone. It's like, oh, fucking hell. Slow news week. I don't think it would have worked that well, but... thankfully, it was covered up until tonight when the truth has finally come out that not only am I into dressing up as a chair and being sat upon until I achieve orgasm, but I'm into it so much I take that chair costume on tour with me. And I have one chair costume to match the Travelodge chairs, another one for Premier Inn chairs, just to really get the ruse going. So yeah, on these, the plan at these, as I said, is for the audience to be involved. But also, anytime I do them, I put a bit of an open invite to anyone I know that's in town who wants to come on and have a bit of a chat. So I'm going to take a seat behind this press conference-looking table. I thought I'd walk around at the front to make you all relaxed, because it suddenly, look at this, look how serious this feels. Okay, guys, we're going to have a talk. How many of you are angry at me because I'm drinking gin and Pepsi Max? That pisses people off in London and Essex. I can't imagine how angry you'll be in Dublin. It's a delicious drink, though, and it's called a Scroobius, so you need to get on board. I invented it. So, yes, I will welcome my first guest, Ireland's own Blind Boy of the Rubber Bandits. I mean, he was finishing a fag when I started. Blind Boy?
Oh, shit, sorry, man.
Hey, man.
I was legitimately drinking a can backstage and not listening. How are you getting on? What's the crack?
How disappointed were you when you saw our rider of, like, posh ales?
Very disappointed. There was a very poor selection backstage, and I managed to rustle a Magners out of him.
It's good, though.
Which is tan beer. I wanted a Bulmers. a rather disappointing rider. Yeah, you had some English stout.
Some English stout, some gin, some Pepsi Max, a lot of crisps and biscuits.
A lot of crisps and biscuits, yeah.
No hookers, no hard drugs. And no light Heineken or anything like that.
The fucking night is young, it's grand.
It is. And you also, you struggled to get in because it was just a struggle here. You kind of had to sneak around and...
Well, I mean, as you can imagine, I don't walk up to a venue with a bag on my head. So I'm just some lad in the foyer saying, I'm on stage. And like, who the fuck are you? I can't say. So it is it's odd.
It's wonderfully mysterious and a situation that escalates if you put a bag over your face to prove it.
There's the thing. What am I going to do? I don't know the person knows who I am. So if I put the bag on, they think I'm going to fucking rob the place.
So how have you been, man? You came on the podcast about a year ago now. You've been nice and busy?
I suppose so. Hold on, I'm going to take my hat off. I only wear the hat for sure, but like plastic doesn't have a frame of reference for cotton. So it always kind of slips off, you know? I've been good. What did I do? I wrote a book.
You've written a book?
Yeah. This is an advert. This is an advert, by the way.
This
I'm
is an
advertising
advert.
My book. It's called the Gospel According to Blind Boy, because it's a lot of lies.
it's a lot of short stories, right?
It's 15 short stories, and I'm very happy with it. I have to say now, I'm so happy with the piece of work that I don't care if someone likes it or doesn't like it, and that's the best thing that we'll say an artist can say is that if you do something and I'm like, I don't give a shit what anyone says, then I know it's good.
I couldn't agree more. With my up and down record label, genuinely, any time someone asks me how record sales are, I haven't got a clue. Because up until like when we're sorting the artwork and when we're sorting the mix and the master and the album, I'm hugely excited. As soon as we've done that, we've kind of achieved what we set out to achieve. The creating it is the achievement, and it's like, right, is it sold? I don't know.
Do you find that with that, right? It's almost disappointing, like when the finished piece of work is done and it goes out there, that there's this existential malaise. Do you ever find that?
What, that you've that project is finished, that journey is over?
That's what I felt like when I finished the book. Writing the book was so rewarding that once it was done and I had it in my hands, I was like, oh, fuck, my life is meaningless, you know what I mean? Can I have another book, please?
Fernando Pessoa used to say that he never finished anything, not because he was lazy, not because he couldn't achieve, but because he was a perfectionist. And he was it's never done. Any project I feel is finished is a project I've given up on rather than completed.
That could be a terrible fear of failure as well, though.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's the biggest enemy of anyone creative is failure and your attitude towards it. And I think to be successful creatively, you have to take failure on as not a bad word.
Yeah.
If I look at anything I've done, like this book that I'm happy with, when I look at it, it's nothing but the product of several failures.
Yeah, completely.
Do you know, failure is a wonderful thing to embrace if you're in any way creative.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of the keys I've always had is the key for me completing a project is a project that I don't want to do more. If you know what I mean. So I'm like, I can't work on that today. I'm going to work on this. And it motivates me through and pushes me on.
Yeah.
So it is those. Yeah. And again, anyone, you guys have done a load of stuff and always kind of creating. And people will be like, oh, you do so much. But they don't know about all the stuff you've failed at and all the stuff you've thought about doing that hasn't worked and tried and haven't got.
The one thing I'll say, anytime something we've done that has, like, it's fucked up, it's always been someone else's fault.
Yeah.
No, I can genuinely say that, you know. Anytime we've got full creative control, we're grand. But there's a television network in Ireland called RTE.
Yeah.
So when I do things on RTE, it tends to be a failure because of other people being cunts.
Yeah.
Do you know? But if they leave us to our own devices, then it's grand.
How was it working with Channel 4 on the stuff there? Did that feel that you got on the right wavelength and it worked? Or did you feel that they were also cunts?
I was only a young fella when I did that. I know that we were only 2 or 3 years into our career and we did... it was the first time... It was a success, right? Because it's the first time I was able to write 30 minutes of television and get it on TV.
Yeah.
But when I look back at it now, I do consider it to be a failure because I wasn't speaking from the heart.
Right.
I was listening to commissioners who had an idea about what we are, telling us what they would like us to do, and me trying to fit into that. Whereas what I want is just whatever my heart is telling me. When I was writing this book, it was, when I was writing a story, it was like going into a cinema and watching a film that was made specifically for me reveal itself to me.
Yeah.
Do you know?
That's beautiful. I think it's tough with the way, I guess with the money that has to be in TV now, I think it means a lot of the balls have dropped out of TV because...
Yeah, there's no money left. I mean, pretty much, if you want to do TV now, you better have a Netflix special or fuck off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, completely.
It's the truth. There's nothing. There's no... If you think back 25 years ago, like amazing television, like Reeves and Mortimer.
Yeah.
Where's the Reeves and Mortimer now?
Yeah, completely.
There's none. I mean, you've got like panel shows and stuff where there's an occasional giggle, but I want brass eye.
Yeah.
Do you know? It's gone. It doesn't exist. There's no longer... It's a bit like the music industry too. You can, you're either independent and not commercially successful, or you're massively successful. But the in between is now disappearing. Like, I'm a huge fan of Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
Like, Frank Zappa is, thank you for the woo. I love Frank Zappa very much. I enjoy Frank Zappa very much. But he's doing some mad shit, and I don't think Frank Zappa could survive today. But back then, he was actually able to sell a million records. Because there was no choice. If Zappa released a record, you had no choice.
Lou Reed
has got an album called Metal Machine Music. And this album that Lou Reed released, he was trying to get out of a record contract. There was two albums left in his contract. I think it was with Sony. And he was very angry. So what Lou Reed did is he simply left his guitar on the amplifier for 2 hours and recorded the feedback.
Yeah.
And pressed it to fucking vinyl. And it was a bestseller simply because it was Lou Reed. There was no internet. There was nothing. You had to buy it.
Yeah.
Now it's been seen as a pioneering example of noise music.
Yeah.
Despite Lou Reed going, no, I left my fucking guitar on an amp.
It feels like a pioneering example of trolling people.
It's trolling.
A tricky candy. Well, you've got to buy it to hear it.
In a way, but there's a part of me. One of the things that... not breaks my heart, but one of the things I don't like about it is there's a small bit of bad faith in that, okay, you're fucking over your record company in a very funny way, but at the same time, you're kind of fucking over the listeners too.
Yeah.
You don't go from Walk on a Wild Side to 2 hours on my guitar on an amp while I'm smoking a fag out the back.
Yeah. One time I agreed to do a charity single.
Yeah.
And it was a re-recording of... Oh, what's that track that's just Silence? What's that dude's name?
Oh, Philip, not Philip Glass, John Cage.
John Cage.
444,
yeah. And
I do a great version of that, man.
When I was asked about it, I was like, this is kind of bullshit, it's kind of pretentious. But it did then, I loved, because they were getting a load of...
What was the charity for, by the way?
I can't even remember.
I hope it was for deaf people.
I wish it was, but because they were getting a load of celebrity musicians, and they were like people from Madness and stuff like that, the thing that I was then buzzing off was that is actually, these are all people who are probably never all in a room together and silent. And that was something
that became something
that was genuinely, I thought, this is special. And it was kind of shit because it also became a reflection of how society has changed since he did the original one, Cage did the original one, because... The silence was regularly broken by shutters on cameras.
And coughing of people in the audience taking pictures. And clapping, yeah.
Yeah, so there was this silence and there was this amazing weird thing of people who never shut the fuck up, all being silent in a room, but that was being broken by...
Yeah, or like if you ever watch a live performance of John Cage doing 444, they're unable to be completely silent. And the beauty of it is... We have difficulty with silence. Do you know the awkward silence you feel when you just meet someone, you're having a conversation and there's that shit moment of, oh fuck, what am I going to say?
Yeah.
John Cage was like, I'm doing that for fucking 4 minutes in a theatre. With loads of you there and nobody can handle it. Nobody can handle the sheer silence of it. But what's beautiful about the example that you said there with like, you know, having Madness in people, it's like what you're listening to is the potential of what could have been.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
They could have thrown fucking Bob Marley on it as well, or Kurt Cobain, because they're dead and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. They could have had a Tupac's hologram. Mm. I don't know if that makes a hum when they fire it up.
Yeah, Tupac's hologram. Just have him doing nothing, just standing
just
there.
Just chilling there, arms crossed.
Yeah.
All angry. I want to go back to as well. I think for me, one of the things that has not fucked up all TV, because I think there is still good TV being made, and I think we are... time when, because of the way digital is, people are willing to take more risks because it's not a case of will this be popular at Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not finding a slot for it, it's making it and seeing if it works. But the thing that I think has fucked up for me is the US thing, and it's started to come over a bit as well, of pilot season. Of making a pilot and seeing if the people like it. And for me, it's like, well, no. Number one, if you're a commissioner, you should have the taste and balls to be able to choose and commit to it. And number two, someone should be able to see their vision through. You can't go, oh, we're going to make one, and do you like it? Because you're not going to make anything great if you're trying to impress everyone in the first scene.
No.
And the first 10 minutes, if you're building
pilots,
any art.
Most pilots of anything good are shit. Because look at, like, even if you look at the first step, actually, no, The Wire had a first good pilot, but, like,
I put The Wire on. I put The Wire on, and I stopped 10 minutes in to make sure I'd put the right disc in.
Oh,
because I thought I'd started
on
this too. Because it felt like I wasn't the beginning of a series. I was like, oh, is this? And I
They're
fucked up before, because when Jackie Brown came out on DVD, it was a two-sided disc, and we put in the wrong side. But it's Tarantino, and we were like, he's so crazy. So we just started halfway through the film. Then watch the first half of the film.
My friend was on an airplane and they were showing Brokeback Mountain, but it was like United Arab Emirates was the plane. So they'd censored out all the gay stuff. And he didn't know what Brokeback Mountain was, so he just sat through the most pretentious film of two lads up a mountain doing nothing.
Go up a mountain, come back down, had a lovely time.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what they'd done and they put it on.
I love that. Oh, man, I hate that.
But on the same plane, they had the full version of that film. What is it? United? The film about 9/11.
About the plane crash. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's okay to put the plane crash film on the fucking plane, but not the one where the lads kiss. No, can't have that.
Can't have that. It's not acceptable at all. That'll freak people out too much.
But I know, like, TV is grand. Like, I mean, the thing you did with Tom Hardy, that was fucking class.
That was good fun.
Really fucking good.
We
actually
can do more of that.
I can't remember the name of it, even though I watched it all. What was it called again?
Taboo.
Do you know what I love about Taboo?
What?
Do you know the character of Butcher Bill in Gangs of New York?
Yeah.
I have not a fan theory, but, like, I get the feeling that Tom Hardy's character is like a prequel to Butcher Bill.
Right.
That he's going to head over to New York and that's what's going to happen.
I like that.
It's the same kind of thing.
And what was cool about that, though, because speaking to Tom when he was trying to get that made, is it was that same fear that you were saying about people fucking it up. And he decided he needed him, Stephen Knight, and Ridley Scott. If he had those three names, they would get the freedom that they needed to make it something good.
You're not fucking
if they
Ridley
didn't
Scott,
have
like...
them, even with just two of them, he felt the BBC or FX or whoever else would put too many handcuffs on them and say, no, you can't do that. But with those three names, it felt any TV station is going to be grateful to have them
absolutely
involved, because Ridley Scott and Hardy particularly are generally doing huge movies rather than a TV show on the
and
BBC.
And it shows. It's got a hell of a lot of integrity. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It was scary as well, though, because when that came out, there was, again, that same fear. Because in this day and age, you've got more leeway with TV, but if it's all up at once.
Yeah.
Because people will watch four episodes in a row and then decide if they like a series, whereas the way Stephen Knight writes is slow builds. It's not, as we said, not trying to impress instantly. So they were panicked that you're going to watch episode one and be like, do I want to wait another week for episode two? And then when that comes around, do I want to wait? Whereas if you add it all on downloads, you'd instantly, you'd smash through four and go, this is great.
Yeah.
But that fear of those gaps. So it's mad that even people like Stephen Knight and Ridley Scott and Tom Hardy are scared of those same things because
humans,
of those restrictions.
Like, they're humans.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking Better Call Saul. That's playing a very long game.
It's a hugely long game.
I'm watching that for fucking three series. I'm waiting for something to happen. Like, but I'm like, do you know what I mean? Shoot someone.
It's 100% true.
It's easy. Am I watching a legal drama? Is that what I'm getting after getting involved in? No, because I didn't sign up for a legal drama.
Is Better Call Saul a prequel? It is, isn't it? It's a prequel to Breaking Bad.
It's three seasons in and nothing's happened.
That's where they're mugging you off. What they're building up to is Breaking Bad.
I know, but come on.
And they know the payoff's great because everyone loved it. They're like, long game. And now Breaking Bad.
I want to see Gus Fring giving someone a headbutt. That's what I want to see. Not interested in an old folks home and the legal battles around it, as noble as that intent may be.
I drifted off of it because the novelty of going, oh, that's that guy, wore off after like the first season. I had a full season of going, oh, this is exciting, that's him, oh, he's going to turn into him, he goes on to do that, and then I was like, I'm just going to pop Breaking Bad.
I watched it on a lot of bad Chinese hash once, and I thought his brother was a witch. And I swear to fuck, it made it a lot better. Because he was going around with his silver cape. And I was kind of getting a whitener, so I was kind of trying to rationalise it. And I'm going, yeah, his brother's a witch. Now, I know his brother's a witch. Going to find out at the end his brother's a witch. And I loved it. And I almost was writing an email to the producers going, I like that bit where the brother was a witch. And then they fucking drown him at the end. Wouldn't that be good now?
Well, have you watched American Vandal? I mean,
You've just paid
to come and watch us catch up in reality. But
what's it about?
American Vandal. It's a new one on Netflix, and it's,
I love the name, man.
It's great because it's a comedy. It's a mock version of Making a Murderer type thing.
Okay.
But the crime they're trying to solve is this school kid has been expelled for spraying 27 cocks on the teacher's cars.
Okay, that sounds good.
And it's great because the first two episodes, you're just like, this is hilarious because they're taking it so seriously. Generally, by the third episode, I'm like, or maybe it was Sam. And like you, because they've copied that structure of how they do Making a Murderer. And genuinely, I smashed it through it in 3 days. Because I was genuinely like, I need to know who it is. And the way they do it, they build someone up.
Is this
pull
comedy?
Them down. Yeah, it's comedy.
Oh, good, okay.
It is a comedy. But that's the beauty of it is, at first you're like, this is comedy, but it's puerile and stupid because it's just about cocks.
It's 27
but
cocks.
Genuinely, one of the big revelations is they suddenly look and go through this particular bad kid's history of drawing cocks, because he's drawn them. The reason he was fingered for it, because he draws them on the boards all the time. And they're like, hang on, he always draws pubes. And the 27 cocks on the car haven't got pubes. And they're like, this is a different artist. And genuinely, it's stupid. But you're sitting there like, fuck, they're not his penises. That's not how he draws penises. So yeah, it blew me away, and yeah, I've watched it recently, so it's just been a little advert for it now. But yeah,
man, I'm watching it. That.
Yes, well, before we
when you said American Vandal, I was just thinking, fucking Colin Farrell inside a phone booth, just drawing on it. Like, when... actually, that's the thing. Have you seen that film Phone Booth?
Yeah.
How long did he spend inside the phone booth, and he didn't vandalize it once? That's what made it a bit far fetched for me.
The patience.
I can't go into a phone booth without vandalizing something.
I once I was at uni and I had a breakup, and my mate had a breakup at the same time, and he came around and said, oh, we need to go out. And we didn't go out drinking, but we went to my cupboard and got a couple of tools and went and smashed every phone box in Wolverhampton. That was our getting over a breakup. So let's try and
it stood to you to this day.
It has.
Look at you now.
It's
up here.
It's got through. But we made a challenge of trying to throw the hammer to go through two windows. So to smash one is something, but to try and get that Thor throw to go... And my mate Mark, I managed it once. I never managed it.
I hope someone is going to be listening to this podcast and then they look back and they report at the Wolverhampton Council. That'd be great, wouldn't
it? It's got to be a statute of limitations a thing, right?
No, man. There's a bylaw in Wolverhampton that says that there is no statute of limitations on phone box vandalism. Everything else, you're grand.
Genuinely.
But that'll stand to you till your grave, man. They'll turn up at your funeral for that.
Genuinely, the other thing that night was we stole a road sign, and it just stayed in my flat. It wasn't a big deal. And then...
Where was it to?
That's it. 6 months later, I was moving to a new house. My dad came and filled up a van with me, and we went to move to my new house, and we couldn't find it. And then we went and filled the second van. The reason we couldn't find it was because the road sign that we'd nicked was the road I was moving into. So it wasn't signposted. And it was before sat-navs. So we're just looking on the map going, no, it's not here. I don't know where this road is. So, yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
My own fault. Weird, right? Before we wrap up our chat, the thing that I've had the most requests since you came on and talked on my podcast was, when are you going to start a podcast? So is that a plan now?
It is a bit, actually, because the crowd that do your podcast, Acast,
yeah.
So the last time I was on with him, he was saying to me, speak to these Acast cunts. So I did. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch it shortly, maybe next week. Why not? What's the worst that can happen?
I mean, this won't be going out for a few weeks, so that could be any time.
Yeah.
It's the mystery of it.
It could be last week. I don't know. But...
A week.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to use it as a medium to launch my book. So I'm going to record the short stories of my book and have it as a fiction podcast. But I'm also going to make curated music behind it.
Amazing.
Because if Roddy Doyle could write his own music, he'd fucking do it, you know what I mean?
And it's genuinely the beauty. I think the problem that... The fear I have with a lot of people making podcasts is they think that the only way to make it is slapstick and shitty and really simple and messy, like I do it, as I illustrated with trying to say that sentence, really amateurish. But there's a podcast that Edith Bowman does called Soundtracks. And because Edith's been in radio for years, it's a beautifully produced podcast about soundtracks. And it's great. And the point of podcasts is meant to be that they can be anything. And it's now become that all podcasts have to start with going, oh, have we started recording yet? Oh, yeah, starting a mid-conversation. I do it all the time, but that's become the norm now.
The essence is, and we spoke about it backstage, right? It doesn't matter whether it's professional or unprofessional. It's that you're actually making this because you're passionate about it.
Yeah.
Whereas in radio, it's like, I'm talking about Pine Martens this week because a producer told me and I don't give a shit about Pine Martens or their welfare.
Yeah.
I'd choke one if I saw one. Do you know what I mean? Whereas you say to me, do a podcast about Pine Martens. Yes, please. I'm very concerned with Pine Martens.
Exactly. It's that thing of the problem with a radio is it's podcasts. A radio is asking for permission. Podcasts are doing it and apologising afterwards, asking for forgiveness.
Yeah.
So there's that thing. There's so much in radio. It's like, oh, we probably can't do that. It's like, let's see.
It's the difference between...
I mean, it doesn't always work.
The difference between having sex with somebody you love and paying for sex. If you have sex with somebody you love, it's going to be natural. It's going to be, you know, consensual, mutual. If you pay for sex, you're going to be getting on grand and then someone says you've 10 minutes left. And that's what radio is.
That is 100% what radio is. Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for Blind Boy. I don't know. Someone popped it there.
Someone left this on the table. You can't see it if you're listening, but it is a comic book called Savage Town, which I believe it's written by a fellow called Declan Shalvey. It's a comic book about my own home city of Limerick, which someone has left here. Thank you to whoever left this. God bless.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, my man. So, I'm going to bring out another couple of guests for a quick chat. I won't keep them out here too long, because... I ask if anyone's in town. I literally flew these two over with me so I'd have someone to talk to if I got stuck. But then Blind Boy turned up and it was much better. But for now, please, welcome to the stage my companions on the Drunk Cast and the hosts of Hardcore Listing, Chris and Stu. Before I came on stage, so Chris did the little introduction. And before I came on stage, he was asking where he should sit. And I was getting really angry because I was like, dude, you'll see. You'll see. It'll be very clear where you should sit. Turns out what he meant is in the second half to watch. And I was getting furious. Just like, dude, just stop. Like, we're about to go on. Stop it. Just sit.
You're having a meltdown.
Yeah, I was getting really stressed. How are you guys doing?
We're all right.
All right, mate. We've been with you all day.
Are you all right?
Well, as I said, it's going to be a 15-minute interval. So if you can all be back in 15 minutes. No, not really. Enjoying Ireland, haven't we?
We've had a laugh, haven't we?
We had a lovely dinner.
Meat wagon. Had the meat wagon.
Yeah. Seriously,
That's the shit.
I got the meat sweats. You guys?
Yeah, it was good. It was very enjoyable. So, I mean, you guys are here for a brief chat tonight, but tomorrow night we're getting drunk and talking for hours.
Yeah.
So.
Almost feel like you're trying to hurry us off stage already.
No, I'm not. No, I thought I'd get that in. In fact, I want to start with, you've been to Ireland before.
Yeah.
You've not got any good stories, have you?
None.
Stu, have you ever been to Ireland?
Yes.
Have you got any memorable moments with James Buckley? Any memorable moments?
Yes, I have.
Go ahead.
I bought your gin out and your Pepsi Max so you could have a Scroobius.
Thanks, mate.
That's all right.
They all hate on my invention of the Scroobius, yet you have drunk it numerous times, not on record. You're drinking it now. You drink it casually.
Yeah.
You all hate me on tape.
You're a traitor, and Stu, and I could hear people in the crowd wanted to say when you said, if anyone's got any problems with that, people are holding back, definitely. Does anyone want to try a gin and Pepsi Max? Does that sound good? It's great. It's as bad as it sounds.
It's an amazing drink, and it's also quite healthy. It's low in fat and sugar. I think Pepsi Max is the one that gives you cancer, but that tends to make you skinny too. So
Every cloud.
Yeah, every cloud indeed. But yeah, you've been to Ireland a few times, right?
Yeah.
Mainly swooping in and out for DJ sets with people, though.
That makes it sound like I'm a jet setter, and yeah. You're overplaying me a bit there. I was the dude from the Inbetweeners plus one.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of followed him around. Yeah, I would kind of sort of try and keep him out of trouble. But we've done a few. We've been to Dublin a couple of times, and we've done Galway and Limerick, and I was talking to Blind Boy about that earlier. But we done Belfast, and it was a brand new hotel that opened where we were staying, and the promoter had said, "Oh, it's a lovely hotel, like you can have a great night." And we left Belfast and we drove across to Cookstown. And we DJed in a club in there, and it was a bit rough, the club we was in, I think it's safe to say. And then when we got back, the promoter said, "Oh, is there any chance, like, my brother can come over? Because he's drinking in the pub across the road from the hotel."
Yeah.
And he said, "Can my brother come over and get a photo? Because he loves the Inbetweeners." And so James was like, yeah, of course, yeah, no problem at all. And then I could see the pub through the glass of the hotel, and I could see that this pub was fucking rammed with about 300 people. And I could already see where this was going. There was one guy that was the manager, barman, concierge, the full fucking shebang. He was on his own, and he was running a brand new hotel and was out of his depth. And I've just seen the pub shut and like 300 people come out, all following this promoter's brother who's got this lucky card that swipes the door that opens the door to the hotel where Mr. Bus Wanker is. The whole fucking place just descended into this bar and was going, "Hey, James, go on, say one of your things, say clunge." And he was just fucking petrified because there's 300 people like literally on him. And I sort of had to try and politely go, "I'm just going to take Jay to the toilet." And we was literally like, run. Went in our hotel, locked the door, separate rooms. And then
adjoining door.
They fucking ransacked the whole hotel. I was just running through, just banging on every fucking window, just going, "Fucking Jay, clunge, blah, blah, blah." And not content at that, because obviously he wasn't prepared to open his door and go, "Oh, hey, how you doing?" Smashed all the fire alarms, whole place got evacuated, 4 a.m. just standing in the middle of Belfast in our fucking gym jams.
Selfies.
Yeah. It literally was, mate, yeah.
Mate, that's insane. And the beautiful thing is, James Buckley, his character Jay from the Inbetweeners is wild partying. James ain't like that at all. He's literally he'll get to the hotel and go and have room service. I'm the same, just to clarify, except for when I'm dressing up as a chair and being sat on until I achieve orgasm. But yeah, he's not that guy, so no, I can imagine how painful that would be. All the, it's James.
Yeah, it was pretty awful.
This
trip's been a right laugh. It's been really good so far.
I mean, we've been here half a day, but
we had a good laugh on the plane, didn't we?
Yeah.
And you weren't having fun on the plane, was you?
No, I don't find... their humour isn't to my taste. So I was trying to read my book on the plane.
We was making videos of ourselves, singing different songs
from
Top Gun.
You were doing that thing, weren't you? You were doing that thing that's really funny. Right.
And so we was just fucking around. He's reading a book. We ain't flying to fucking Vegas. We're flying to Dublin. It's like 40 minutes. There you are reading your book.
Got a good couple of chapters done.
Yeah, you didn't, because I was watching. You were listening to us getting really annoyed.
I was not. I was blanking it out. I was channeling white noise into my head to try and focus and read stories. But yeah, we've been having a laugh so far. We're not.
Well, we're quite sober, which is rare for us three to be sitting.
Tonight is a mild one. Yeah. Fucked. So when we were asked, I was asked to come and do this, I thought, well, we should do the first ever live drunk cast. And if anyone's heard our drunk cast, they're an absolute mess. It's just us three sitting there and getting drunk until we turn the mics off, essentially. The last one, you walked out.
Yeah.
Didn't your uncle croak or something like that? That's why you had to leave? Or was it just because you...
Thanks for bringing it up. Yeah.
Yep. So actually, in between...
He wasn't listening. Like...
In between episodes, Jew's uncle died. Again, he wasn't there, but he got a phone call about it. So we just kind of, we cracked on. But yeah. Stu left.
You cracked on, didn't you?
Okay, yeah. No,
Stu left because Chris was really bad at 20 questions. He thought he'd invented the game 20 questions. And the only difference is it was more than 20 questions. Just him asking questions until he guesses a name. But then it ended with you putting on a riot helmet and trying to do the worm, which then meant you smashed the ice bucket and poured a liquid all over my new studio.
Yeah, your new studio, so we trashed it. So
we thought, why not bring that to a live audience? but genuinely, because we were genuinely concerned, like, I guess it's never happened, but if we do a drunk cast at mine and it's really shit, then we don't have to release it and no one knows. But if there's an audience there, but so you guys do a podcast called Hardcore Listing, mm-hmm. and it's all based on top fives.
That's right.
But you've had some good guests are picking some good shit. Who springs to mind?
We've had recently.
We did the Maccabees.
We've done the Maccabees on Monday. We've done lots of indie bands like Blue Tones, Elastica. We had Mark Moore from Essex Press, Gal Porter.
Yep.
Gal Porter picked her top embarrassing, awkward interviews, which included interviewing John Travolta, running out of things to say, so just starting to sing Summer Loving until he joined in, and then they just sung Summer Loving together.
The full song.
Beautiful.
Even the falsetto bit at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, so we thought we'd make it a hardcore listing drunk cast.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to have some top fives prepared to go through.
Yeah.
We're going to ask, in fact, on the audience questions bit in part two here, if anyone wants to suggest a top five that we should do tomorrow night, then do that. And yeah, we'll try and see how drunk we can get and how many top fives
we can
get
through. Because we're not coming on stage till 11:30, so this is
so
a car
that's
crash.
That's the worrying bit. So
and
fucking dangerous.
Originally, they said there's no curfew.
Yeah.
So we can just keep going until the authorities come.
So these guys don't know, but the drunk cast bit almost didn't happen because they were asking a lot of venues and couldn't find anywhere that wanted to have us. and then they literally came back to me a week and a half ago. Stu was like, can we announce it yet? And I didn't want to say, we've not booked it yet, so we definitely can't announce it. And then they said, we've got this one place who's willing to let you go on at 11:30 until you're finished. And I was like, fuck it, why not? So we'll probably be quite drunk before we start, right?
I think that's a dangerous part of it, because normally people, when they listen, they can get used to us getting more and more drunk. If we walk out there, if I walk out there and I'm blazing already.
Right, no, give the example you gave us earlier about that.
You're not familiar with this, are you?
No one is. Anyone familiar with this saying?
It's not a saying per se, but there's an analogy.
He said, when they watch us or listen to us on the drunk cast, they've got us gradually getting drunk so you don't notice as much. He said, it's like heating up a frog.
Has anyone heard that one? I'm not going crazy.
Oh, fuck off. Don't you come. Bollocks. No chance.
You get a frog, pop it in a saucepan.
Can security take all these witches out, please?
I've never
done it. You gotta do it gradually, otherwise a hot tilt.
Really?
Exactly, I hear. And
so I love the fact you got your mate front row as well.
Thank you. Pay you later. So people normally get that. They gradually get into it, and as we start to slur, they're with us on the journey, aren't they?
But
we're going to come out
drunk. It's going to be a mess.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one.
Again, this isn't an advert for it. This is genuinely us planning what we're going to do.
The advert will come later. As you leave, Chris and I will be giving you the little CDs, which gives you little snippets of everything we've done before. And so listen to that, and if you like
it.
There you go.
Come along. We were going through on the plane when I gave up trying to read my book. Because you two were sniggering at the ideas you'd had.
You're such a dad.
I just...
Captain Rock and Roll.
I don't know. I didn't find anything that you said as funny as Chris found everything he said. So it wasn't for me. But a few things that we are going to go through. My favourite one, are we going to try and pick our top five TV theme tunes? It's tough, isn't it? It's exciting.
Oh, no, wasn't it? It was TV intros, wasn't it? So it doesn't have to be the theme tune, but often that's how TV shows start, right? I don't know if anyone's ever watched one.
The fuck TV show have you got in mind? You've obviously got a little trick here in mind.
Yeah, no, I guess it is always just a theme tune.
The bit where Trevor McDonald says, welcome to the news, then the theme tune comes in.
By the way, he's sober. Half past 11 tomorrow night, mate. Watch that
unfold. Do you tune in?
Do you mean when all them programmes started with someone saying, ladies and gentlemen, Princess Diana has died. Here's EastEnders. Dun, dun, dun. That can't be your favourite intro to a TV show.
I think I was getting confused.
Fucking
because
hated her.
One of the other top fives we're going to do soon is movie intros, like the best opening scene. And I think I've got that, the wires crossed in my tiny mind.
A Childish Gambino pointed out that a Lady Di is one of the only people who... obeyed her name.
Why has no one got that haircut anymore? That's a cool haircut, isn't it?
A lady dies.
That hairdresser, Nicky Clark, I think he's still got that haircut, hasn't he? Oh, and who's the bird that does all the sports events?
The one with a really square head.
Balding.
Yeah, balding.
She's gone for a Diana cut. Yeah. Strong look.
You've had some powerful haircuts in your time. I'm surprised you've not asked for that.
What were you going to say, Pip?
Other ones we're going to do is top five celebrities we wouldn't want to get in a scrap with.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to think of top fives you'd want to have a fight with. Mm. The top five you wouldn't want to is more interesting. You selected top five 80s crushes.
And you all now, pretending
me and Chris, no, he started with the 50s, didn't he?
And me and Chris were born in the 80s, so we're literally like, that girl puppet on Playgroup. that's pretty good.
Whizbit,
yeah, it was tough. But yeah, we're going to do 80s and 90s, aren't
we? Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And what else was on our list?
Music t-shirts,
band t-shirts. Mm. That's a good one, right? I mean, I'm just having a chat now with you guys.
Can you give us the answers?
Is there anything else that you guys would like to chat or discuss before we have a little interval?
And then I guess we can say that if anyone that has checked us out on the back of ruining Pip's podcasts, thanks loads for listening. Yeah, that's kind of really nice of you. Yeah. And if you haven't, I don't know what the fuck's wrong with you. You should check it out.
You're missing out.
Yeah. And hopefully see you all tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, so are we going to have an interval now? And as I said, genuinely, the second half relies on you guys. So if you've got a question, I think we're going to do it. I mean, I've not asked anyone in the venue, so I'm making this up now. We're just going to form a queue on that side. So it'll be a 15-minute interval, and we'll start again at like 25 past, half past. But if you want to start queuing at the end of the interval, and then we'll see how many people we can get through on stage and have a little chat. Is that all right with everyone? Well, lovely. We'll see you in 15 minutes. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There you go. So that is the end of part one. As we mentioned, the night after we recorded this, we went and did a live drunk cast. And that was really messy. We started at midnight in the end. It was meant to start at 11 and it all got behind schedule. So yeah, if you want to hear that, head over to the Hardcore Listening Podcast. And those episodes are already up. It's a three-parter. They're under an hour each. So it's about 2 hours, 45 minutes in total of us getting drunk on stage, essentially doing top fives, because Hardcore Listen is a top five podcast, but the drunk cast is us drunk idiots. So we combine the two. Check them out. We'll be back. This was going up at midnight. Part two will be up at midday. You might already have both parts. Who knows? Anyway, if you have, just go on and listen to it. I'll see you in a bit. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.